I'm Nina Jaffe. And on the phone with us again is Marilyn Burns. Welcome back to Teacher Radio.
Thanks, Nina.
Most teachers know Marilyn is one of America's most highly respected experts on the teaching of math. She's designed in-service workshops about teaching math that are used in schools across the country. And she's the author of many books about math for both teachers and kids. Her latest project is a new series of books called Teaching Arithmetic, Lessons at Work for Grades 1 through 6, and it's published by Math Solutions, Marilyn's company. And in our regular phone conversations with Marilyn, we've been talking about issues related to teaching arithmetic in the elementary classroom. So today we're going to talk all about algorithms. Let's start with a definition. Marilyn, how do you define an algorithm?
And I find algorithm is a word that many people just never have heard or really related to. An algorithm is a procedure that works for a large group of problems. It doesn't necessarily have to be a mathematical procedure. We cook scrambled eggs and you have an algorithm. Crack the eggs, mix the eggs, melt the butter, and so on. It's a procedure that works over and over again and very, very important to all of mathematics.
Can you give an example of a typical or fairly commonly known algorithm?
Well, the one that I mentioned when we've talked before, yours is not to question why, just invert and multiply. If you're trying to divide two fractions, you take the second fraction, turn upside down, multiply across the tops, multiply across the bottoms, and you'll get the answer. It's a very efficient algorithm for producing the result to a division of fractions problem.
Right.
And kids learn that. They learn how to exchange when they're subtract and how to when they add fractions across the tops and not the bottoms and multiply across the tops and the bottoms. I mean, all these procedures are basically mathematical algorithms.
Great. So now that we know what algorithms are, what use are they to teachers?
Well, I guess what use are they to anybody? They really make something that you have to do over and over again easier to do and more efficient so that you really don't have to think from scratch if you're every time you're facing it. Take something from being a problem just being an exercise.
Right. From something that could be something where you're actively learning to something that's more rote.
And it's sort of like when I think about the way I learned to play the piano, there's a lot to be understood, but basically practicing those scales, I did so until that became completely automatic for me,
right,
so that when I read music, I no longer had the problem of trying to figure out is this supposed to be sharp or flat. I just knew because the algorithm is there. If it's this key, then that.
So what do you think, though, would be a disadvantage, then, with using or using primarily teaching through algorithms?
Well, see, this is the part that's so difficult. There's nothing wrong with algorithms, and they are an essential and important part of mathematics. It's how we learn algorithms and how we teach algorithms. Too often I see teachers teaching long division. Well, I'll confess, when I first taught eighth grade, we all chanted, divide, multiply, subtract, bring down. Divide, multiply, subtract, bring down. I taught this, and my goal was if I could wake a child up at 2 in the morning and say long division, they would be able to chant this. At that time, it was the only way I knew to help kids learn a procedure that I had learned. And I've been teaching for over 40 years, so I don't do that anymore. I wouldn't do that anymore because it assumes that learning that is something you can understand by merely memorizing a chant. Rather, I want kids to understand and make sense of what they're doing, and the chant will not get them there. The chant assumes that the knowledge is outside and they just do what I say, and I know that the understanding is inside and they have to figure out how to make sense of something for themselves.
Mm.
But at the same time, having a procedure that you just do and get it over with is important. We want kids to calculate with proficiency as well as efficiency. So how do I help kids with that and also not fall into just teaching them by rote? That is the challenge of teaching arithmetic.
Well, I know you believe that teachers should have students invent their own algorithms.
Well, it isn't even inventing algorithms so much as I want students to think about numbers strategically on their own. They may think of something, for example, but suppose I said to you, double 38. I know, I hate to put you on the spot.
Oh, okay.
But how would you do it?
So in my head, I'm saying 38 and 38. Then I'm going 8 and 8. Well, okay, I have to confess. I go right back to the third grade.
You're seeing it on your mental chalkboard.
Right.
And that's very efficient. Well, how about if I said to you, double 40 instead? That's easy. You're not
going
to see 40 plus 40.
Right.
Okay, so now how else might you do it? And kids come up with all kinds of strategies. Most children, interestingly enough, say 30 and 30 is 60. Starting with the tens, which we don't teach as the algorithm, and then 8 and 8 is 16, and then combine them.
Right.
because they go from left to right. They've been going to left to right for everything else. Why now do we go from right to left?
Mm-hmm.
So by that way, I want children to think and do a lot of thinking mentally. Most of the work we do in introductory multiplication is not to teach how you do the algorithm, but how do you make sense of something like 28 times 4?
Mm.
And there are so many ways kids do it. 25 times 4, they know it's 100. So I only have 3 times 4 more. The answer is 112. I just did it as quickly as you could possibly do it with paper and pencil algorithm correctly by reasoning. But that reasoning only worked for how you double 38 or how I multiplied 28 times 4. When you want a method that works for every problem in that kind of situation, then you have to have an algorithm. But I don't want to start there. I want to start with the children's way of thinking and their strategies.
Right. So when they arrive at the algorithm, it really makes sense to them, and they know why they're saying that rule or repeating it in that way.
And this is a critical issue. I mean, when do they need to go to the algorithm? Let's say, well, you want to be efficient. You want to be accurate and efficient. That's what we're shooting for with computation. So the notion has always been, we'll teach them these procedures, they'll practice, and pretty soon they'll be accurate and efficient. Well, we talked earlier about how many new things are being added into the curriculum for teachers to teach. The time is getting shorter. We also have another reality in our world, and that's a $5 calculator. And a calculator is the best way to be accurate and efficient. You go into a bank today, you will never see a teller doing anything without a calculator,
right.
Usually a paper trail. So a real issue is, do you think when we get to the next millennium, we're still going to have children practicing subtraction?
Right.
I hope not, because it really is something that we don't need to do any more than we need to necessarily build a fire to make those scrambled eggs.
Right.
I still want children to be able to figure and have some way to get correct answers in an efficient way. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they all have to do it my way.
Now, let's say a teacher wants to move away from using algorithms in teaching. They've already worked through and understood some of the reasons why just using an algorithm without any context won't give children the opportunity to do the kind of reasoning that you're encouraging and have been throughout your career. What's the major shift required of such a teacher?
Well, the major shift isn't, say, do away with algorithms. The major shift is help children become efficient and accurate computers, and then broaden your thinking about that. Because having practiced algorithms on many, many worksheets won't necessarily get children to that point, and it certainly won't get them to the point with understanding. Because, once again, the errors that we see of kids, we see the same errors year after year after year after they practice the algorithm. So I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. You don't want to throw out algorithms, and some maybe, I show children, here's how I learned to do this. And explain to them what it means to me and give them a chance to try many, many ways. But basically, every child has to have a way to be an accurate and an efficient calculator.
Do you recommend that teachers use stories as ways for children to learn new ways of thinking about math? I know one you recommend in your book is based on Ruby Dee's retelling of an African folktale, Two Ways to Count to 10.
I know, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit? Is there some way of learning rules or algorithm through a folktale or story like that?
You know, this is hard because that story, Two Ways to Count to 10, is a wonderful story about the challenge of how you throw a spear into the air and catch it before you can count to 10. All the animals in the jungle fail till the antelope just threw it up and said 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, boom, got it. So we talked about how many ways there are to count to any number because it was exploration of factors as they relate to products. So instead of the emphasis being on the times tables, we want the emphasis to be on understanding multiplication in as many ways as possible, and that particular book gave access to that particular way. You see, the thing about people saying, can you show me an easy way to do this? I said, you know, mathematics isn't easy. Teaching mathematics
right. Isn't
easy. And so we have to keep struggling to make sure that the kids are understanding what they're doing and developing skills. It's just like, I don't expect every child to have the same handwriting. Why do I expect every child to multiply in exactly the same way? Mm-hmm. The way I was taught to subtract growing up at PS 225 in Brooklyn is very different from how I teach and how most people teach the algorithms for subtraction today. I was taught this crazy way of borrow payback rather than this exchanging stuff. And I show it to teachers. They're just astonished.
Right.
Well, I never understood it. It didn't matter. You just did it. And I was one of the lucky few who came out finally figuring it out. Look at all the mathematical casualties we've had from people who never understood.
Well, those are important questions for teachers to think about and some solutions that you've provided as well. Thank you, Marilyn. It's been great talking with you again today. Marilyn Burns will be back again on Teacher Radio. And in the meantime, you can find more math wisdom from Marilyn at the Math Solutions website, which is www.mathsolutions.com. You'll find information about all of her books and videos and about the Math Solutions workshops for teachers that are held across the country. And you'll get the latest news on Marilyn's new series of books, Teaching Arithmetic, Lessons at Work for Grades 1 through 6. The website address again is www.mathsolutions.com. Bye, Marilyn.
Bye, Nina.
I look forward to our next phone call.
And so do I.